that.
Do you pick a new name every time we record?
Yeah.
So first it was Courtney Love, then it was Anne Frank, now it's Jeff Mangum's daddy.
Okay. I'm Jeff Mangum's daddy.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the first official episode of the Alternative Vault podcast. And today we're going to be kicking off with an absolute indie classic. This is a cult classic. This is a 4chan classic. This is a Reddit classic. This is an Anthony Fantano classic. Whatever you want to call it. The classic In the Airplane Over the Sea by Neutral Milk Hotel. Now, this was probably like the first, like, I'd say, quote-unquote, indie album I've ever heard. And it knocked me off my socks. Like, the first listen, I will never get back because it was just so important to, like, my taste in music today. And, yeah, I listened to it, like, a long time ago, about like, five months ago. And, very long time ago. It's ancient. But, yeah, no, I do think that's, like, the main reason for my music taste today. And, it was longer than 5 months ago, by the way. It was, like, when was July? That was, like, 8 months ago, right?
Yeah, around there.
Yeah, that was when Lanny and I met up for the first time. Because if you guys don't know, we don't, like, know each other, like, IRL. Like, we're internet friends. I've met him once. And, we'll probably hang out more. Hopefully so. What? I'm doing a podcast right now.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's my dad.
A low rider.
Maybe we'll have to edit some stuff out. No, we're keeping it rolling. Okay. So, yeah, Lane, what would you like to say before this review starts?
So yeah, I'm really excited to talk about this album because it's one of my favorites of all time as well. And I feel like we should talk about like the first time, like what we felt the first time we heard it. It's like packed with emotion and packed with a lot of messages. So like the first listen can like really hit you. So like how did you feel like first time hearing it?
Yeah, that's a good start. I felt like this weird like kind of feeling that I don't think I've ever felt before. It's like because it's so unordinary. It's like nothing you would ever expect. Like especially like the first, I guess, two songs. It's really like one song. Right, it's three parts, but it's technically one song anyway. When I feel like this part two and three kicked in, and you heard the line that's "I love you, Jesus Christ," which is like really odd, and then like you all of a sudden gets picked up really heavily, and you got the fuzzed out guitars and everything's distorted. It's just like it's such a strange feeling. There's so much emotion, and it's like probably like the most emotional album I've ever felt. And it's like kind of like an album that I like have an actual connection to because like it came in at a really like significant point in my life where it's like I needed like that one album because I feel like everyone has a like one album that like quote unquote saved their life. And I feel like this album is that for me. And that it's just something that, like, I just kind of, like, stuck with me and, like, just kind of signifies me as a person. I don't know how to explain it. It really isn't that deep, but to me it is. What about you, Lynn?
Yeah, I first heard this album. It's almost been years, which is crazy. I heard it around June, I think, of 2021, which is last year. And I was just obsessed with Anne Frank. Like most people, they get obsessed with the Anne Frank story because of this album. But I got, like, completely obsessed with the Anne Frank story. Like, I was, like really feeling shit for Anne Frank, right? Not in that way. I'm not Jeff Mangum. But I heard about the album and how people said that it was about Anne Frank and this kind of the whole story about her and her family and the annex. And I was like, okay, let me check this out because I kind of already knew that it was like, you know, one of those virgin core albums that everyone like likes to meme. So I was a little hesitant to listen to it at first, like I'm sure a lot of people were. But I remember sending a setting, listening to it for the very first time. And it made me feel things I hadn't felt in music for like a really long time. Cause it's got this honest feel to it. It's got this really lo-fi production, and when the production is high on your face, it's very fuzzed out and not necessarily clean. So whenever I first heard it, it really made a mark on me, especially. It opened the doors for a lot of like experimentation in my music listening. But I don't think I've ever heard an album that sounds like this one, that conveys the emotions that this one does. And I think first listen, I don't think anything like any other listen following the first listen will ever top the first listen in terms of just how I felt when I was listening to it, because it's just, it can take you somewhere listening to this for the first time.
Yeah, it truly is, like, does feel like a spiritual connection. And we'll probably get into, like, the actual story of this album later in the episode, but I think we should probably start off with the track listing and going, like, track by track like we usually do. So starting off, the first song is called King of Carrot Flowers, Part 1. There, as you might know, there's three parts to the song, which is technically only two songs, which is technically only one song. But, so let's start off. It starts off with this, like, very ghostly sounding, like, haunting. I don't know if haunting. But it's, like, very, like, calm, like, chill acoustic guitar riff, like, a few times, and it kicks in with these double-tracked vocals panned hard left and right. And just with headphones on, I think especially, like, just the production value and how lo-fi it is, but also, like, how gorgeous it sounds just really adds to this. And it's it starts off with talking about, like, his childhood and then going into, like, more sinister, like, kind of, like, stuff. And just it's basically, like, I had sex with you while your parents were having a divorce downstairs. Like, that's that's basically, I mean, what, I'm not lying. I don't know if
I mean, yeah, you're not, yeah.
But yeah, no, this has, like, always been one of my favorite songs on this album, because, like, the lyricism, it's so, like, unique and different, and something I could never think of before this album. And just something about it is just so, there's, like, some kind of charmer to it. And it's, like, something that just never gets out of your head with the melody and, like, the rhyme scheme. And everything just tied together just makes it such a perfect song, especially with Julian Koster's accordion keys. They come in so tastefully, and, like, all the keys parts in the song are just so fabulous and so well-arranged. I gotta give huge props to the musicians, besides Jeff Mangum. Like, the actual musicians in the Neutral Mokoto band are top-tier musicians, especially with Jeremy on drums. He is an absolute monster. We'll get into that soon. But yeah, it's always been one of my favorite songs. Lane, you have anything to add?
Yeah, I do want to talk about what you said about, like, listening to this album on headphones, because it has a really unique charm to it, because the lo-fi, some of the songs were just no production at all, or if there is production, it's just a microphone. It feels like you're in the room with the band. Like, it really feels like you're in the room hearing these songs played, like, right next to you in real life. And I think that really adds to the charm of the album, and I think it overall makes you feel like you're there inside the music, which very few albums can really do that. And like I said about the lyricism, I love Jeff Mangum's lyrics. I think as a songwriter, he's not necessarily a literal writer. I feel like he relies a lot on imagery and not necessarily shock value, but more just out there lyrics to get his points across. And I think that's fantastic. I mean, this song has some of the best lyrics on the album, some of my favorite lyrics on the album. And I think it's a great start. I like how the instrumental kind of builds near the end, and then the vocals kind of kick out before it fades out and goes into part two. I think it's a really great intro to the album.
Yeah. I think he, going back to what you said, I think he really relies on scenery. Because, like, when you're listening to this album, you can close your eyes, you can just, like, picture everything he's saying, like, in perfect detail. Like, for some reason, I don't know if this is definitely just me. Maybe not. I don't know. But when I, like, listen to this, like, songs like this, like, songs like this or Two-Headed Boy, for example, I always have, like, the scenery of what's happening just, like, in, like, the style of the Eleanor Rigby, like, music video from Yellow Submarine. Like, that kind of, like, type of, like, animation just running through my mind for some reason. And I never really understood why, but it just kind of happens like that. But I also really love how all, like, I think, like, all the songs fade into each other. Like, the track listing is absolutely perfect on this thing.
Oh, yeah, the track listing, I think, is just, like, one of the best ever.
Oh, yeah. So it ends on the last note, and it starts on the next note for the next song, and they just completely fade into each other perfectly. And it starts off with a banjo by Julian Koster. And the opening line to this song is very unique, and it's memed a lot, but I think it's actually very intelligent, because the line goes, "I love you, Jesus Christ." Well, what a lot of people don't point out is the comma after "I love you." So basically, he's just saying, like, "I love you, oh my God," like, kind of that kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that's like a genius move on his part, because it gets people talking about it. And I feel like Jeff knew that people were going to talk about the line and kind of misinterpret it, which is why I think if you buy, like, a physical copy of the album, and if you look in the lyrics where it, like, has this, like, where you would find that line originally, it's not in here. It's got, like, a little paragraph in the notes talking about, by Jeff, talking about what the line, like, really means to him. And while it's like pretty vague, it definitely gets the point across that it's not a religious statement. Yeah. And I feel like a lot of people kind of hear that song or hear the memes about it and just kind of think that Nitro Mikotel is a Christian band. And you'll look them up and you'll say, like, is Nitro Mikotel a Christian band? Like, they're not a Christian band. People just love to misinterpret that line.
Yeah. And I love how this whole song builds up, like, more and more. Like, it starts off very hollow and shallow and, like, kind of, like, eerie and just builds up. And there's this sound effect that almost sounds like a train horn, but it's Julian Koster bowing a banjo, and, like, the whole thing explodes, and there's distortion, and he keeps repeating the I love you, Jesus Christ line, and the trumpets start going, and it just builds up, and the drums start getting louder and louder and louder. And this kind of, I guess we consider this part three right here, when all the instruments, and every single instrument gets distorted. And I'd like to point out something really cool and interesting. There were no distortion pedals or fuzz pedals or big muffs or like amp settings or anything like that to make like all the instruments distorted. What they did was they turned up the instruments like really loud, so it like gave them natural distortion, then turned it down in post-production so it didn't blow everyone's ears out, even though it's still very like loud. And I think it gave like a really unique distortion, because like even the drums were distorted, and mostly the bass, because I know like a lot of people talk about this distorted bass. But it's very warm and fuzzy. I think it just gives such a well-rounded kind of sound to the lo-fi production quality you have here. But something about how upbeat and fast and punchy, and every time I listen to this song, I always get up and just jump around and just bang my head. I don't know what it is, but something about this, like, the way it transitions from part two to part three is something that I will, like, always cherish from this album.
Yeah, I think the way that they did the fuzzy sounds on the album, like you said, there wasn't, like, any effects or anything. Just the way they did it kind of, it makes it, like, its own unique thing. Like, that's why I feel like the way they recorded it and the way that they kind of made the sounds makes it unique to this album. And I think also a big part of that is just, like, the really obscure and weird instruments that they used for this. Like you said, there was, like, was it the horns? The singing saw. The singing saw is all over this album, and that's something that you never see on any album. There's, like, pipes and flugelhorns, or whatever you want to call it, on this album. Like, you don't see anybody using those kind of instruments, and if you do, it's people that were inspired from stuff like this. So I think it adds to the unique charm of the album. Just, they were able to take these really weird instruments and just really weird sounds in general, put them into an album, and it doesn't feel jarring at all. It makes it feel like its own unique thing, and it's got a really great charm to it.
Right. And I feel like the reason they use this, like, kind of weird instruments is because it's trying to, like, revolve its sound around the World War II kind of era. And, like, you, the instruments kind of, like, remind you of, like, marching bands or, like,
just... Oh, yeah, And we'll get into some of the interludes where, like, they really hammer on the horns and the other instruments, and they kind of have the drums go for that marching vibe. And I think that's another... That is probably definitely another reason why they did that, but it really makes the album feel sound like nothing else.
Right. And I like, this song, this part three, is just so upbeat and so punchy. It's just, like, I think it's probably... It's definitely the best song out of the three. Parts.
Oh yeah, easily. Yeah.
And if you like really like actual indie rock or like fuzzed out guitar riffs and all that kind of upbeat stuff, like I consider it a punk song. If you like that kind of stuff, you would definitely love this. But yeah, and I think it ends on like such a great note, that little piano drops, like that little piano key going into the next song. It's such a beautiful ending. I don't know. It's something about that. Just always, it's like you're always looking for it to end, or you're looking for it to end, right? And just all of a sudden, boom, canopy. Did I just say I said canopy. Oh, Christ. Piano key. Oh, God. Anything else to add?
No. I just think that this is a perfect intro to the album. These two tracks back to back, or I guess this one song at the beginning of the album. It's a perfect album opener if I've ever heard one.
Yep, I think so too. So now it's moving on to the title track, In the Aeroplane Over the Sea, which is, I believe, their most popular song, right?
Yeah, probably. Either this or Hall and 1945, but I feel like this one edges it out a little bit.
Yeah. It starts, the thing about Nitro Mikotel is, the guitar is very simple. It starts off with the same four chords. It's a very common chord progression. But I think, once again, his lyricism and his melody just takes away all of that. And the distorted bass kicks in, and there's these weird drums that, like, sound nothing like I've ever heard before, and like little screeching with trumpets. And this is a common debate. I think we actually had a debate like this in our group chat with our friends. I don't think the song even has a chorus.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's got like a weird structure to it. It's really hard to pinpoint where the chorus is. I don't even think there really is one.
Yeah, it just kind of seems like it's a bunch of verses in the bridge, but a lot of people consider there's a chorus, but I don't think so. But just something just so charming. I think especially with his voice, like the rawness and I almost want to say congestiousness.
Yeah, and that's something that I'll probably be bringing up as we go along. I love his voice because it's got this imperfection to it. Like, he's not trying to make himself sound crystal clear, like extremely perfect on every song. He comes off very vulnerable on a lot of the songs. You can hear his voice kind of giving out the higher he goes up his registers. And I think, it just adds to the uniqueness. Like, I'm going to say this a lot with this album. The album is extremely unique, and Jeff's voice is one of the most unique voices you'll ever hear. And I think it's because he pushes himself intentionally. He tries to get that grit and that emotion out of his voice like that, and he lets the imperfection seep through, and I think that's a really admirable trait.
Yeah, and something that you definitely notice about this song in particular is the Anne Frank references.
Oh, yeah, they're very apparent here.
Basically, Anne Frank. Jeff Mangum was reading the diary of Anne Frank before recording this album, before recording his debut album, and he ended up having these lucid dreams where he would go back in time to save Anne Frank and all that stuff. So there's a lot of Anne Frank references, and like he always had like this weird obsession with Anne Frank. And I'm not gonna lie, seeing how inspired and like how the diary of Anne Frank made something like this, I went to the library and picked up a copy of Anne Frank and like read it. That's the closest I ever came to finishing a book. I never finished it. I got like 80 pages in though.
It's weird for me because I got into the album because I was so affected and interested in the Anne Frank stuff. And I 100% get why he decided to like base a lot of the tracks around it, because the more you look into it, the more you realize how like really messed up it was, and like it can like emotionally affect you. Even though, like, a lot of people will say, like, oh, you're goofy, like, because, like, you learn about it in school and all that, but, like, you look into that, and there's some, like, deeply emotional stuff in there, and so I 100% get why he wrote a lot of the songs about it, and I feel like they translate really well into the lyrics.
I think it makes an absolutely amazing concept, and if you guys hear that high-pitched sound, like, that kind of sounds like one in the background, that is Julian Koster playing a singing saw. This is a very, like, one of those strange instruments that Lane was talking about. Like, I've never heard about a singing saw before this album. But something about it just gives that weird sound, that weird feeling in the back of your spine. That kind of, like, I don't know, it just gives me goosebumps every time I hear it. It's so ghostly and so haunting. It just gives a perfect vibe all for the song.
Oh, okay. this is easily one of the best songs lyrically on the album. It's got, like you said, it's got a very simplistic chord progression, but everything that they build around it, I think it's masterclass songwriting. This is an anthem. People have really made it an anthem, like, not necessarily an anthem in song form, but people can chant this one and sing it with, like, a whole crowd of people, and it works extremely well. The lyrics are really great. It's a very haunting song, but it's also a very uplifting song and feel and tone, which I don't think people bring up a ton. Because it's got that sad vibe to it, but it's also got, you know, that kind of uplifting tone and just the way the music sounds. Right. 100% see why this is, like, the most popular song.
Oh, yeah. Oh, definitely. And I think it's well-deserved as well. Moving on to the next track, Two-Headed Boy. This has always been, like, a fan favorite for most people. I've always liked it, but I've never came back to it that much, even though I love this song a lot. I don't, like, listen to it, like, on... like religiously, like most New Hermit Club fans do, but I still really appreciate it, and I always vibes this when it comes on. And this is one of the songs, once again, the scenery. You know, it's like a two-headed boy, and how he was like putting on to it, like his church shoes and radio wires, all that stuff. It's like, I don't understand how he gets this sense of scenery, Jeff Mangum, but something about it is just so cool, like the storytelling, like you know. Nobody would ever think of, like, a story like this. And I think it's just everything about this and how he belts out all the notes, even though he, like, can barely even manage to hit the notes. He just belts it all out with all, like, and I feel like this dude actually has, like, maximum lung capacity. Because, like, if you try and sing along to a Nisha Mokoto song, like, you'll find it's, like, extremely difficult. And I know Anthony Fantano said this, but it's fairly difficult.
Yeah, this is easily one of the best songs on the album, in my opinion. It's one of my favorites. Probably my second favorite on the album. And you'll see what my number one favorite is as we go along. But it's just another one, like, the best songs written on the album. The way it's recorded is really cool, too. It's just Jeff in the guitar for the whole thing, which really lets you focus on the imagery that he portrays in the lyrics and just the way he's playing. Very simple chord progressions and just the way. But it's got a very complex structure, too. Like, the way all the chords are kind of arranged in the song. It's very unique compared to the rest of the album. Obviously with using simple chords, but that doesn't matter at all. Yeah, there's fantastic imagery in here. This song definitely gets people going about whether the album is actually about, like, the character of Two-Headed Boy, because obviously there's, like, a reprise, or I guess Two-Headed Boy Part 2, which is, like, a different song near the end of the album that kind of brings it all around. So people get talking about that. I really don't see that, but it's just, yeah, one of my favorite songs on the album always has been. This song, like, really hits me every time I listen to it.
Right. Yeah, I mean, there's not much more you could even say about this. Like, you just kind of have to listen to it to yourself, for yourself, because it's very hard to explain to someone that, like, hasn't really heard it before. But if you have heard it before, you know exactly what we're talking about.
And it's a very, very beautiful song. Like, it's just Jeff in the guitar, but the feelings you feel with these songs, like, it's just pure great songwriting. Like, there isn't any production technique to make it feel some other way. It's just Jeff and his guitar. And he can make you feel, like, all the emotions in the world. And it's
right,
fantastic.
And seeing as I've always said this, I feel like it was... I always felt like it was recording, like, a house. Like, just, like, a regular house. Like, when it was, like, all dark outside and, like, nighttime. And he was just there with his acoustic guitar, one mic in the room, right there. And it turns out that this album actually was recorded in a house, believe it or not. And I think that just fits perfectly for the mood. But I think... Also, once again, I always say this, but the transitions to each song. This song transitions into, like, a World War II kind of theme marching band interlude before Hall of 1945, which is another one of the most popular songs and probably my favorite song in the album. But so anyways, let's go on to the instrumental track, and it is called The Fool.
I have a lot to say about this one. It's an interlude track, but I think it's, like, one of the best way that you could pull off an interlude track, because it's got that, like you said, the World War II themes, the marching, the way that the music sounds, it's got that vibe to it. But also this song, like, emotionally affects me. Like, when it gets to the horn sections, like, around the middle part, where it kind of branches off from the regular part, it's just a really, really pretty piece of music. And this is one of the songs that wasn't composed by Jeff, and you can tell if you look at the chords, because they're using, like, not necessarily complex chords, but it's, like, got a D minor in there and just stuff that Jeff doesn't typically use in his chord progressions. It was remember I don't remember the band, his name's blanking right now. Scott Spillane, that's who it is.
Yep.
Scott Spillane wrote this song, and he plays, like, all the horns and all the cool horn parts you hear on the albums, and he's the one that composed this song. And it's not one of my favorites on the album, because, you know, it's an interlude song, but I think it's just as good as just the actual songs on the album. I think it's a great addition to the album, and one that I feel like people overlook just because it's an interlude. But don't look down on this one, because I think it's a fantastic instrumental track.
Oh yeah, definitely. It fits the mood of the album perfectly, and I think it was definitely needed for the flow of this album.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah. And especially if, like, if you knew, like, the backstory behind the album and how, like, in Frank and the whole World War II scene was portrayed, it would definitely make a lot more sense. It would just kind of, like, have that, like, aha moment in the album. And it was just needed, because going on to the next track, Hall in 1945, it's a perfect song to go right before that track. And something about this song just makes me so happy and so uplifted, and, like, it makes me, like, jump up and dance every time I listen to the song. Because going back to production, because obviously I don't know if you guys definitely know this, but I like to do, like, production and producing and all that stupid stuff. One side of the guitar and bass, like, one channel is distorted, like heavily panned to the left, and the right channel is clean, like acoustic guitar. And so it just gives that like vibe where it's like, you know, it's half like calm, and the other half's like all distorted and I don't know what the word I'm looking for is, but anyways, I think I do consider this like another one of the punk songs, and just everything about the song, and this is the song that references Anne Frank the most on this album, I believe, right, Lane?
Oh yeah, this is I think the only song that's 100% about Anne Frank and the Holocaust on the album. Like the other songs have references to it, but this one is 100% like all the way through by Anne Frank.
Right. And just like the lyrics and the melody and how hard he like belts out all the lyrics and the drums, especially I love the drum beat on this song. It's so cool and interesting, and I just especially this song when we talk about production. The production on this song is unlike anything I've ever heard in my, like, all of my existence, ever listening to music. This is just the, like, go-to song if I'm trying to, like, get some inspiration to produce something. It's always this song.
This is the song that you listen to if you want to find out what Nutrimoco tells about, because it's got some of the best lyrics in their entire catalog. It's got that really crazy fuzzy production. All the band members get to shine on here. You got horns, you got that crazy drum stuff as you were talking about, the great songwriting and vocals from Jeff. And just the way the song is structured and just how it goes on with the verse and the chorus and the verse and the chorus at the beginning and then that little ending section near the end. It's a perfect song. Like I think there are better songs on the album, but if someone's just trying to sit down and write like a straightforward pop song with a fantastic message and just overall like great production and instrumentals, I have no clue why this wouldn't be in your arsenal of inspiration, because it's a fantastic and perfect song.
Yeah, definitely. I think this is my favorite song on this album. But it also is the perfect match to go to the next song, which is Communist Daughter. And something about Communist Daughter is so eerie feeling. It gives me goosebumps every time I listen to it, because the sound effects. You have like sound effects of like a ship going by, or a baby crying, or like, I like to think of it as like bubbles popping in the air, but, and it's the same chords as Hall in 1945, just in a different order, and the meaning behind the song has always been widely debated by Nutrimoco fans and actual members of the band. Like, nobody really knows what this is about, but it references Anne Frank, really only thing that kind of ties to Anne Frank is the Communist Daughter title, which I'm not even sure if she was a communist or not. I think that just, like, I don't know. But, Lane, anything, guys?
Yeah, this isn't one of my favorites on the album. It's still a fantastic and beautiful song. I don't really think any song on this album is bad. I think, like, this whole album is, like, an 11 out of 10 all around. The lyrics on this thing are just, like, they're ones that no one has ever really been able to pinpoint. They tell a really interesting story, but, like, you don't necessarily know what the story's about. I have a feeling Jeff maybe did that on purpose, because I feel like his lyrics are extremely up for interpretation. I feel like he wrote them that way, because they have a lot of imagery, they have a lot of metaphor, they have a lot of crazy words in them that make you question what the song is actually about. And I feel like this might have been one song where Jeff was just leaving the song completely up to interpretation, because there's stuff like semen stains the mountaintops where it can mean like 15 different things and none of them could probably be right coming from Jeff Mangum.
But
no, it's a nice pretty song. It's got those great horns near the end, and I think it transitions greatly into the next song, so fantastic little track.
I love how like after we're done reviewing a song, it's like, and it transitions greatly into the next song.
Because every song just flows together perfectly.
Exactly. No, this is definitely the perfect track list. This is the best track list I've ever... Yeah, definitely the best track list. It goes into this 8-minute masterpiece recorded all in one take. One single take. And at the end of the song, you can actually hear one of the band members yelling, "Holy shit!" in the background when the song is over, because the dude recorded in one take.
Yeah, it's all a one take track, and the only like overdubs are like, you know, backing vocals and stuff like that Jeff added on later. It's all in one take. This was the song that sealed the deal for me on the album. Like, I was listening to it and I really liked it, and then Oh Calmly hit, and this song made me cry first time I heard it. Like, it's just an emotional masterpiece, and I love absolutely everything about it.
Is this one of the songs that's so hard to review because you just kind of have to hear it for yourself? Like, there's no words that can match what you're about to witness when you listen to the song.
Yeah. I will say this song has like three different lyrical sections, and like all three of the verses are like, in my mind, they're like about three completely different things. Like, it's the first and second verses have this very sexual nature to the lyrics, but there's very like metaphor. There's a lot of metaphor and crazy words that he uses, especially in that second verse. It's just, it seems like word salad when you first look at it, and then you pick it apart and there's like some absolutely fantastic imagery in there. And then the third verse after that chorus section and the a cappella vocal or whatever, it goes into Anne Frank again. Right. But it's got some of the most touching lyrics about the subject, I think, on the entire album. Specifically when I was listening through, and the lyric where he's like, I know they buried her body with others, her sister, her mother, and 500 families. Like, that hit me hard. Like, that's where, like, maybe Breakdown listen to this song. And the lyric can really hit you. And it's a two-part song. It gets into the first half, and then the second half has got those horns in the background, and then Jeff kind of going on and doing that vocalizing. And it's a song that can, like, break you down. And it's mostly just Jeff again, just Jeff and his guitar. So it's a real highlight for his songwriting and just the way he puts together tracks. And it's just, I think it's a perfect song. One of my all-time favorite songs on the album.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely. It's that for, like, a lot of people, because it's just one of the songs, like, nobody would expect. Like, it's
Yeah,
it's just something that, like, nobody would expect. And it's just, this is, like, one of the songs where I don't really like using this word at all, but masterpiece.
Exactly.
That's just
100%.
Oh, yeah. No, and that's, like, and the thing about this song is that it's in the key of E, which goes into the next song, which is in the key of E.
Yeah, it's crazy because I've learned this whole album on guitar, and it starts out with the E chord, and then you go to the next song with this ghost, and it's like that E chord again. So it kind of makes everything feel a little bit more joined near the end of the album, because a lot of albums, they kind of feel disjointed as you go through, and you're at that ending section. And that's where you expect the album to kind of feel a little wonky, a little disjointed, but the album like stays extremely consistent and cohesive all the way through, and that's a testament to the band and the songwriting.
Oh yeah, definitely. And the song's called Ghost, and this has also always been one of my favorites, and a lot of people don't like it as much, but something about how the drums kick in and there's like fuzzy guitar in the background of the acoustic guitar. And here's another song about Anne Frank.
One half of the song is about something completely different about a girl who died falling out of an apartment building.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if Jeff like read about it and decided to write about it or if we made it up, but and then another half of the song is about Anne Frank, or at least some lyrics directly or indirectly relate to Anne Frank. But yeah, this is a great song.
Oh yeah. Oh man, that's just one of those songs that like there's one of those feel good songs. It's so upbeat, especially after Oh Calmly, like emotionally devastating song like that, and just like it kicks up again. And I love Jeremy. He's such a great drummer.
His drumming really shines, especially near the end when everything just like has that huge cacophony near the end and all the instruments and everything, and the production just goes absolutely crazy.
Oh yeah, definitely. Just like the way he like writes his drum parts is something so unique, and I've been trying to force my drummer to write drum parts like him, but yeah,
and I think this song has one of my favorite lines on the album, which is "I know that she will live forever; she will never die." Which obviously, like coming off the heels of Oh Calmly, obviously Anne Frank was on my mind, and that definitely related to her for me. But yeah, this album this song, it's got a very feel good vibe to it. It's got a more uplifting vibe musically, even though the lyrics are quite depressing. But on just the musical level, I think this is one of the most uplifting songs on the album. It's fantastic coming after Oh Calmly, and then it perfectly fades into the next track
in the same key.
Yeah, in the exact same key. Yeah,
this song relies heavily on a bagpipe, which is very annoying to a lot of people, including me occasionally. I showed this whole album to my mother actually, and this song gave her a headache. But I tried the bagpipe part on a guitar, and it sounded fantastic. Like, it sounded like a billion times better.
See, this is the part of the album where, like, me and Nick, like, disagree the most because we've talked about it before. I love the bagpipes on Untitled. I love the insanely loud volume of Untitled because I feel like it's like the closer before the closer. Like, you know, it's right. It feels like the end credits, but there's still, like, a masterpiece after it, you know? It kind of feels like it wraps everything up in, like, one big insane cacophony of Neutromoke Hotel-ness. It's just, like, one of the most Neutromoke Hotel songs on the album. Oh, yeah. It's got all those crazy instruments laying over each other, and the instrumental is just, like, going up in the air with how loud it is. I love the song.
I was just about to say, like, if there was a song that defined the band, it would probably be this one.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Because it's just something about how trippy it sounds. It's so unique, and it's just, like, something about it just blasts your ears out. It's like shoegaze with bagpipes, and no, it's just crazy how, like, loud and distorted and everything sounds, but it's just so beautiful, and there's, like, harmonies at the end with that,
Yeah, then honestly, this is the song of all the songs, which I could say this about basically every song, but this is the song the most where I feel this way. No other band could have pulled this song off.
Oh, yeah.
And if any other band did this, it would sound like absolute garbage and it just would have ruined the album. But the way they do it, because they're Neutromoke Hotel, it works absolutely fantastic. And then fades into the last song, which, there we go.
Yeah, I forgot. It fades into the next song via Singing Saw, and it goes into Two Out of Boy Part 2, which is, it's the same chords as Two Out of Boy, just, a half step up. And this is just one of those, I generally do think this is, like, one of the greatest indie rock songs ever written.
Oh, no, I think this is one of the greatest songs ever written, period. This is one of my favorite songs of all time, my favorite song on the album, and just, I don't know how I'm going to be able to put into words how much I love this song.
I used to not care for this song too much, but now when this song comes up, I will actually start getting a little teary.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Especially the bridge section. And in My Dreams, You're Alive and You're Crying.
Yeah.
The thing about that hits so hard, and the way he delivers his lines in this song is just so special to me. And it's just so heartfelt. And he's just giving so much emotion to this song. And he's strumming his guitar with all the emotion that he has built up in his voice. And especially the last few lines, but don't hate her when she gets up and leaves, and he stands up from his chair and puts his guitar down and walks away. You can hear him just, like, leaving the album.
This is, like, the most masterful track listening to this album, because it goes from the most loud, boisterous, and overproduced track on the album to the most underproduced and most beautiful track on the entire album. And the lyrics on this thing are some of the most pretty and best lyrics I think I've ever heard. And it's just, I love how it goes into the Two-Headed Boy reprise near the end. And he literally, at the end, walks up and leaves, and basically leaves Neutromoke Hotel. You kind of envision it like that, because this is their last album. This is, like, Jeff pretty much spilled everything that he could really do or say into this project. And he really couldn't do much of anything else with the band other than tour and get the hell out.
Yeah.
It's crazy to think about, like, this is the last note that we hear from this band, and it's, like, their greatest statement.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And I feel like a lot of people are always like, oh, I can't believe Neutromoke Hotel did release more music after Aeroplane. And here's the thing. I generally do feel a lot of, it obviously is because of his nervous breakdowns that he left the band and all that stuff, but I genuinely do feel like nothing they could have done after this could have topped Aeroplane.
Oh, yeah, and even then, I feel like there would, I feel like there wouldn't have been a need to continue. Like, I'm going to bring up a band that's not even remotely related to this band, but My Chemical Romance, just hear me out for a second. Gerard Way did not envision My Chemical Romance going past Black Parade. He felt like that was the band's last final statement, and then they came out with Danger Days 2 years later, 4 years later, and that album was not very well critically received. It's their weakest album by most fan standards. I feel like that's what would have happened in Neutromoke Hotel had they continued on after this, because they really, I don't feel like they should have continued after this album, because Jeff had already felt like he had said everything that he needed to say. He had gotten all of his musical thoughts and expressions off his shoulders. I feel like if they were to continue on, it would have felt forced and not necessarily great. So I would have loved to see them continue on, but I feel like that this is the way they should have gone out.
Yeah, this is that I wouldn't want it any other way. Like this, the Airplane had to be their last album. And if it wasn't, and they did make more music, then I wish they would make more music before Airplane came out. But Airplane just had to be their last album. It had to be.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. So now we're going to go to overall scores. So all together, write this album. What would you give it?
Oh, easy 10 out of 10. It's one of the most cohesive albums I've ever heard. The concepts and themes on the album are fantastic. Every single song is a hit. Every single lyric on the album hits for me. The artwork is some of the best album artwork ever. Some of the best songwriting I've ever heard. And you can meme this album to death as much as you want, just because of, you know, how critically acclaimed it is in like the music sphere and how many incels like it. but if you like actually sit yourself down and you pick apart this album and you pay a lot of attention to it, it will reveal itself to be like one of the greatest musical experiences you've ever heard. And I've shown this album to basically all my friends since I've heard it, and they've all loved it to death. But this is an album that I feel like it can affect anybody emotionally unless you're just like a vegetable. Yeah, easy, like, 10 out of 10, 11 out of 10, 12 out of 10. This album is, like, one of the greatest albums ever.
Oh, yeah, definitely, I agree. Yeah, just an easy 10 out of 10. I feel like almost everyone I've sent this to either thought it was pretty good or, like, was crying, thanking me because I suggested this to them. Like, that's just, like, one of those things where it's, like, so emotionally impactful in someone's life and can actually make a difference via the music. And it's just something that, like, everybody, I think, needs to hear before their lifetime's over. That's just me. But it's just, my mom said that it was, like, a mix of Bob Dylan and Green Day, which is an interesting mix, but I can
kind of... she's not necessarily wrong, because it's got that folksy element, but, like, it's more so anti-folk than anything. It's got that more up, like, you know, like you were talking about how Hall of 1945 and King of Carefathers Part 3 kind of had that punk energy. So I could honestly kind of see it. And it's an album that's up to interpretation. Like, this is, like, one of the most interpreted albums ever, because there's so many people that are debating what the lyrics mean and just what the album sounds like. So, yeah, it's an album that I feel like is interpreted, like, a whole lot more than most.
Oh, yeah, definitely. So, everybody, that was our first episode of the Alternative Vault Padcast.
Broadcast.
So, yeah, go ahead. If you want to hear something else, please leave a suggestion. We have an Instagram. I'll put it in a bio of our podcast page or whatever. Shoot us a DM or on Anchor if you listen to this on Anchor. I don't know why you would be listening to this on Anchor. But you can also send us like audio like message requesting like an album for us to review. So anyway, like any album you would like, just go ahead and send us a message.
Yeah, we're not limiting ourselves this time. We're not like strictly like talking about 90s alternative. Like, we're talking about like anything and everything we feel like talking about, stuff we like. So hit us up, we'll even talk about stuff that we hadn't heard previously. We'll give it a listen, we'll talk about it. So just hit us up with suggestions. We're really excited to just like be doing this like in a more chilled out manner, instead of just like having it be constantly edited. Like, this is, I think, the best way for us to like truly express our feelings about the albums.
Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah, and the more lo-fi production as we
the more lo-fi like production.
Yeah.
So, we like that good lo-fi production on the podcast.
Right. All right. So thank you everyone for listening to this if you made it this far. Yeah, sorry about the stuff that we're not gonna edit out. We're keeping it all in. But yeah, so go ahead, give us a follow or something, and we'll see you next time. See ya.
Yeah, peace out. Yeah.